took the youth, some of the youth. There were, I think, six youth and myself snowboarding this week. On Thursday we went. Everybody was a newbie, well, except myself. Everybody was a newbie snowboarder. So it's kind of fun. Nobody knew what they were doing, and we all rented some equipment, and I tried to serve as the instructor to teach them. It was a lot of fun, and it was a nice day. We even had good conditions and all that. There was, like, some mishaps, some falling. I warned, one thing I said, as the people are learning snowboard, I said, just get ready to fall. And I even told them, too, as we're getting out of the van, make sure your pride stays in the van. Because we're going out there, and there's going to be little kids, and they're going to laugh at you, and you're going to fall lots. What maybe we didn't fully anticipate is how hard people would be falling. And as you know, sometimes. Everybody was actually hurting, I think.
Oh, no.
But Kai was probably hurting more than most. So he kind of got the brunt end of that. We got there, it was just before lunch. And I had called the day before to try to book equipment. And they said, oh, no, we don't reserve online equipment. Just come. I said, okay. He said, yeah, there'll be about 400 or 500 students here tomorrow. I was like, oh, that's a lot of students. I wasn't too keen on the hill just being covered in kids. But so we got there. But anyhow, we got there, and there was a lot of buses. Most of them had gotten there before us. They were kind of going through the queue, and I went in to buy our lift tickets first, and they go, we'd rather not sell you the tickets till you know you can get equipment. And I was like, oh, as if. And so anyhow, we rushed over to get the equipment. We're going through there quick. But as a result, when we finally got our equipment, it was about 11 o'clock, and I kind of anticipated it would be this way. I was like, you know what, let's just try to put off lunch till we're done. Try to eat something before, which we tried to do that, and just wait till the end. Let's just do our 4 hours. We got 4 hours. Let's be out there right through lunch, because a lot of the little kids will disappear off the hill, and there'll be a bit more space. And so that's what we did. We skipped lunch, and we just kind of survived off some granola bars and Gorp. You know what Gorp is? Good old raisins and peanuts, trail mix, as people call it now, I guess, a Gorp, eating all that stuff. So we had a bit of that. And I noticed after, you know, a few hours, I was starting to get a little bit tired. And I figured, well, you know, you're up there, Stephen. It's not, you know, you're walking up hills a bit. You're up there. Don't worry about it. You're just tired. Then, you know, you kind of notice you get a bit unfocused. You just kind of get that feeling inside. And then sure enough, soon the headache comes. You're like, man, I got a headache, and maybe I didn't have enough coffee this morning. That's the first thing I always think. And then I noticed, hey, I'm pretty thirsty. All those peanuts, maybe, and all that dehydration. And so I grabbed a drink, and boy, as soon as you taste that water, you realize that's what it was. I was really thirsty. I had these symptoms, didn't even put it together, that I was actually very thirsty. I wish I was a little bit more attuned to those symptoms in my life, because there's plenty of times that I thirst. There's plenty of times that I experience feelings of being tired or dissatisfied, unfocused or agitated. I can be restless. I can be worried. I can be irritable. I can be angry. And yes, some of those are the symptoms of not drinking enough water. And so maybe I just need to drink more water. Maybe you need to drink more water. But it's funny how a lot of the symptoms of a spiritual thirst are very similar to those of a physical thirst. And it's those ones that I wish I was more attuned to, I was more aware of, more sensitive to. God addresses our spiritual thirst directly in Isaiah 55. We're going to be looking at that. And it's a powerful passage. I really like it because it's not that it's some passages are better than other passages. But in this particular passage, we have God speaking directly to us. It's not John talking about God. It's not Paul talking about God. But it's God speaking directly to his people through the prophet. And so it's a really neat passage in that regard. So we're just going to read Isaiah 55, verses 1 and 2. Come, come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And he who has no money, come, buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me, and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. We're going to look at a few things in this passage. We're going to look at who the passage is addressed to, what is being offered, and how do we get it. First, who is it addressed to? He says, come, those who thirst, those who have no money, come. He's not talking about physical thirst here. He's talking about a spiritual thirst, people who yearn inwardly. He could have just as easily said, come, all you humans who are breathing, or come, all you humans who have a heartbeat. I think the universal human trait is that we thirst, we crave things. We're built that way. It's referring to our desires, it's referring to our needs, but we are all dependent on things outside of ourselves for survival, but also for satisfaction. Sometimes our thirsts point to the source, point to the thing that will satisfy our thirsts. Sometimes when we're hungry, we feel hunger, and we know we need to get something to eat. Sometimes we feel thirsty, and we know we need to go and get some water to get a drink. Sometimes we might be cold, and we know we need to get warm, or we need to find shelter. Maybe you feel, you just don't feel safe, you feel unsafe. You need to find some security. Maybe you could call these higher forms as we move on too. You might sense a need for love. You might seek out relationships. You might need community. You might feel lonely and you need community. You might have a craving or a need to learn something, to know something. And so you know to study, to read, to look for, to seek. Now there's other times when our thirsts don't point to the source. And that's what can sometimes make it confusing. Like those times when I crave pizza. It's not because my body needs pizza. It doesn't ever need pizza. But sometimes, when I'm upset emotionally, had a bad day or a rough day, I crave pizza and ice cream and chocolate. I crave comfort foods. But it's not that my body needs the chocolate. My thirsts aren't really pointing to what the true source is. I can get the pizza. It doesn't really deal with the issues. It actually creates a few more. I can eat a lot of chocolate. Creates a few more issues. Or you'll hear people say, maybe more in movies, maybe real life, man, I need a drink. Referring to an alcoholic drink. Now, really, there might be some kind of addictions going on there. But really what they're saying isn't really that they need a drink. It's just that they have gone through and faced an issue, a situation, and they're looking for something to meet an urgent need. But really, it's not going to satisfy. It's not going to deal with the issue. They have something deeper. There's something deeper. And so their thirsts aren't really pointing them towards. Other people will, maybe they try to find satisfaction through relationships. They just chase after another relationship, dump one to chase another. And it's not dealing with the real, their thirsts, their desires aren't pointing to the real issues underneath. Now, even beyond all these things, even if you were to get all the cars, to get all the toys, to end up with a great family and a beautiful house with a dog, 2.5 kids, and you've the great shape, you're physically, you're at the gym, you're killing it there, or if not that, at least you're healthy. And still there can be a yearning. Still there can be a thirst. I read you a great quote from Tim Keller. I just think this was such an astute observation. As long as you think there is a pretty good chance that you will achieve some of your dreams, as long as you think you have a shot at success, You experience your inner emptiness as drive and your anxiety as hope. And so you can remain completely oblivious to how deep your thirst actually is. Most of us tell ourselves that the reason we remain unfulfilled is because we simply haven't been able to achieve our goals. And so we can live almost our entire lives without admitting to ourselves the depth of our spiritual thirst. And that is why the few people in life who actually do reach or exceed their dreams are shocked to discover that these longed-for circumstances do not satisfy. Indeed, they can enhance the inner emptiness by their presence. Isn't Now think of yourself. Think of people you know. Isn't that true? I know a young man. I don't think any of you know him. And he was returning to the faith, you could say. He was raised in the church. His mom was a Bible-believing person. And he knew that his life wasn't where it should be. And he was making changes, making difficult decisions. And he was growing in his knowledge of the Lord. He was starting to turn towards the Lord. And something happened in his life. There was some agitation there. And he dropped God. And you know what he did? He picked up a dream. He dropped God and he picked up a dream. And this goal, this dream, for him it was opening a fitness gym. Or exercise gym, or bodybuilding gym, whichever, one of those things. That became his thing. It was his everything. Every time I talked to him, it came back to the gym. How are you doing? What are you involved in? I'm really excited. I got up today excited because I am pursuing this dream. I have a vision for how it's going to go, and I've got a 2-year, I've got a 3-year, I've got a 5-year, I've got a 10-year plan. And he completely dropped God and picked up this dream. And you know, that dream is going to carry him for a while. He's made changes in his life so that more things support the dream. But like Tim Keller said, eventually there's going to come a point. There's going to come a point where the dream collapses. And then, hopefully, he realizes, oh, I'm empty. I'm empty. I was chasing after the wrong thing. And he'll realize that thirst, that craving that he had, that he was trying to fill with a dream, it wasn't anything. It wasn't anything. It didn't satisfy. And I've seen this in my neighbors. They seem, you know, talk to them and they seem like they have it all together. They have it all together, and you wonder, and this speaks to my insecurities, I acknowledge. I wonder, what do I have to offer them? I know the salvation message. But you know, I'm a wreck, and I worry about things. And I look at these people, and they seem like they got it all together. They got a nice house, they got their car, they got the dream. They seem to be very satisfied. They seem very happy, and they do. They have a dream that they're chasing. They have a dream that they're chasing, but then it unravels, and all of a sudden you see the harshness of what they're left with. It's nothing. It's emptiness. They've chased after something that cannot satisfy, and they're left with empty hands. And that leads to maybe a dramatic changes that they try to bring about. It's almost like an upsetting of the fruit basket. Things aren't right. I'll just shake the basket. I need a new wife. I need a new house. I need new something. And then the dramatic change comes. Maybe it's divorce. Maybe it's an affair. Or worse, maybe they just turn over to despair and go for substance abuse. Or ultimately suicide. They're left with nothing. They're left empty. And these are the people that the passage is calling out to. You have a thirst. You can't afford. You don't know how to buy. You have no money to buy what will satisfy that thirst. And so come, come. There's waters of refreshing. Now think of it. This is spoken in a dry and desert land. Water represented life. Without water, you would die. But not only that, but water represents refreshing. All you've had it, I hope. I had it on the ski hill where I'm parched and I'm dry. I don't even know it. And then I drink some water. I'm like, oh, that was exactly what I wanted. Simple, plain tap water. Just water. Water is refreshing. You see, he says to them, come buy wine and milk. Wine representing exuberance, joy, gladness of heart. Milk, nourishment. You see, young animals, they need milk. They need that nourishment. God's saying, come and receive refreshing. Come and receive life. Come and receive gladness. Come and receive nourishment. You'll not find it anywhere else. You'll not find it apart from me. come without price or money. We all live in a culture where we're saying, you get what you pay for. We've all been stung. We've all bought something from the dollar store. We've all bought something. You price them all out and you say, I'll take the cheapest. And a week later you're saying, I should have took the second cheapest. You get what you pay for. And so it sounds like not a very good offer. If you're at the carnival downtown and a guy's going around selling you Rolex watches for $5, you know you're not getting a Rolex. And so you might say, well, come without money. This is free without price. Is it worth anything? Well, there's another way of looking at it. Because in actuality, the quenching of your thirst actually had a great price. A very high price. It's just that it's been paid. And the same, if you have your Bible, you look at the next page over, Isaiah 53, verse 5 and 6, it says, but he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. We all like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. And so, it's not a cheap gift that's being offered. It's a gift of great price, but it's been paid for already. Now, what is being offered? What will quench this thirst? Salvation. A restored relationship with God and everything that that means. Here's a great quote from Alexander McLaren on this passage. And what is that gift? Well, we may say salvation, or we may use many other words to define the nature of the gifts. I venture to take a shorter one and say it means Christ. He, and not merely some truth about him and his work, he himself, in the fullness of his being, in the all-sufficiency of his love, is the reality of in the reality of his presence, in the power of his sacrifice, in the daily obtaining from the source into the heart that waits upon him, of his life and his spirit. He is the all-sufficient supply for every thirst of the human soul. Do we want happiness? Christ gives us his joy, abiding in full, not as the world gives. Do we want love? He gathers us to his heart, in which there is no variableness, no shadow cast by turning, and binds us to himself by bonds that death, the separator, vainly attempts to untie, and which no unworthiness, ingratitude, or coldness of ours will ever be able to unloose. Do we want wisdom? He will dwell with us as our light. Do our hearts yearn for companionship? With him we shall never be solitary. Do we long for a bright hope which will light up the dark future and spread a rainbow span over the great gorge and gulf of death? Jesus Christ spans the void and gives us unfailing and undeceiving hope. For everything that you and I need here or yonder, in heart, in will, in practical life, Jesus himself is the all-sufficient supply. That's what's being offered. Now, how do we get this that will quench our thirst? He says, buy without money and without price. Here's two calls he makes. He says, come, and buy and eat. And then later on in verse 2, he says, listen diligently to me and eat what is good. He's calling. He's saying, here, you're not looking in the right places. Turn from where you're looking. Come to me. If my children are off somewhere and it's time to brush their teeth, I'll say, come. You're hiding in your room playing with your toys. Come to me. I need to brush your teeth. Or I'll say, listen. Stop saying what you're saying. Stop thinking what you're thinking. And listen. Turn. And so it's a call to hear, it's a call to go toward, but it's also a call to respond. So come and buy. Listen and buy. Respond to the call. Come to him and respond to him. come to Christ acknowledging that you bring nothing. You come hungry, come thirsty, come abandoning all other things that you've been turning to. Everything that you've embraced, believing that it would bring you joy, peace, meaning, or satisfaction. Abandon all those things. Come empty with nothing. And listen, block out the other voices. We live in a culture that is bombarding us with messages. Block out those other voices and listen to Christ. Listen to his call. If you have been living for anything else, it will leave you thirsty. It will leave you craving. There is not another source to quench your spiritual thirst or your neighbor's. Our greatest need is a restored relationship with God, and it's found in Christ. All our daily needs, our life, hope, strength, courage are found in Christ. Not only that, he promises to meet our daily physical needs as well. So two questions. What is it you need? Number one, what is it you need? What is it you need? I talked about this a bit last week too. What is it you're lacking? Run to Christ. Run to Christ and find that which you need. Number two, is Christ enough? Is Christ enough? What if you came to Christ and you never got the marriage you were looking for? What if you came to Christ and you didn't get a car and a house? What if you came to Christ and you didn't get health? Is there a deal breaker for you? Where you say, I was looking for a bit more treasure than that. Where all of a sudden Christ is not enough. Is Christ enough? Examine yourself. Take some time to consider, to think. Talk to Jesus. Take some time this week to spend alone with him. Talk to him about what drives you. Talk to him about where you have your hope set. How you feel hopeless, maybe. And ask him to fill you with his hope in his life. See, we live in a culture. Jesus said it's easier for a camel to pass through an eye of a needle than it is for one of us to enter into the kingdom of heaven. And especially a warning for us living in Canada. We have incredibly, an unfathomable number of opportunities. We're places we can stick our hope. And we're constantly bombarded with messages saying, stick your hope here, live for this, drive for that. We don't use those words all the time, but they tell us, this will make your life better. This is what you're missing in life. And you must feel it. I do when you drive around town. You feel the yearning when you meet people. You feel that coveting pull. It's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for me to enter the kingdom of heaven. It's easy for my heart to be drawn away. It's easy for your heart to be drawn away. Where is your hope? Where is your life? Where are you going to quench your thirst? It's a warning for us. Now, one last note on thirsting. There is a reality that you will always experience a thirst. There's two reasons for that. One, you have a sin nature that you will battle for the rest of your life. And you will constantly be tempted and drawn away from Christ. You'll constantly be tempted to find your satisfaction and your joy in other places. Because as soon as you do that, those things become your God. Those are the things you start to look to for joy, peace, meaning, satisfaction. That's your God. So you're going to feel that constant pull away. Be thankful for those times, though. When you feel that, and you notice it, you realize it. Thank God for the grace that you see, man, I've been looking other places. I need to turn. I need to hear that voice. I need to come back to the Lord. And thank God for the grace that you should see your sin and the grace to turn. And there's another reality too. That until we are in heaven, until we've come home, until we see Jesus Christ with new eyes, there will always be a degree of thirst. But that thirst doesn't draw us away from the throne of grace. It draws us to the throne of grace. So there is a good thirst, a thirst, where we crave more of God, where we're dissatisfied because we just want more of him. That's a thirst we would aspire towards. And so I would challenge you this week, spend time examining your heart and your life and ask yourself, what is driving me? Are there deal breakers in my life with God where I say, God, I'm chasing after you, but if I don't get this, what if the worst possible scenario were to fall through for you? Would he still satisfy you? Is he still your joy? Is he still your portion? Take time this week to examine, to ask him, to expose the sin in your life, to expose the gods maybe that you're chasing after in your life.